My name is Chuck Dom. I'm a Dominican priest from St. Pius V Parish in Chicago, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening. In our first reading, we have this beautiful text from Isaiah where he's expressing the people's need to have God reveal himself. People are yearning to see God and to feel God, and they know that they have strayed from God's ways. But nevertheless, you know, we are the clay and you are the potter. We are in your hands. Come, Lord. A very fitting reading for the beginning of Advent, because they were waiting for the Messiah. And we believe the Messiah came, Jesus Christ. So we know he came. We are going to celebrate his birthday at the end of Advent, but we also are waiting for his second coming, which is what Advent is about as well. Now, we sang in our song opening today, Christ be our light. And we do believe that Christ brought light into the world, which needed his wisdom, understanding, love, and compassion. And we need it. That song we sang was longing for light in the darkness, longing for hope, many despair. And that's true. I know many people who despair that God is even hearing their prayers. They think that God has abandoned them. They pray and nothing happens. I'm referring particularly to victims of domestic violence, many of whom I've known. They are in their own home suffering abuse behind closed doors, and they cry out to God and doesn't seem to be listening. But we know that's not true. And we are called to be the light for them, to be their hope. And that's my topic today, domestic violence. And you might say, well, why are we talking about that? I mean, we see a lot in the news about sexual assault and sexual harassment in the workplace. But domestic violence is also rampant in the United States. The Center for Disease Control says that a woman is battered in this country every 6 seconds. It also says that one out of every four women at some point in her life will be either hit or sexually assaulted by her partner. And that's astounding. One out of four. During the wars of Iraq and Afghanistan between the year 2000 and 2006, there were 3,200 Americans that died in those two wars. But in those same 6 years, here in the United States, there were 3.5 times that many women murdered by their partners, more than 10,000. So it's a huge problem. And it's a problem that affects our young people, many of people your age. A study 3 years ago showed that one out of every five girls in her third year of high school had already been hit on a date. One out of five. And 2 years ago, the American Association of Universities issued a study that showed one out of every four girls in college in her 4 years will be either sexually assaulted or sexually harassed. And that's shocking. That makes us very concerned. Now, men, of course, are also victims of domestic violence, but they're a small minority. The studies aren't very good, but maybe out of 10 victims, one or a little more is a man. So I'm speaking primarily about women, but my intention is to include men as well. Now, we might say, well, you know, this doesn't happen in Evanston, right? This is an educated, more affluent community. But again, the studies show that domestic violence occurs in every community and at practically the same rate. So it makes no difference if you're rich or poor, in the city, the suburbs, if you're African American or Caucasian, Asian, Latino, it makes no difference. It seems to happen everywhere. And I know that if you were to ask the Evanston police, what is the number one most frequent 911 call they receive? They're going to tell you it's domestic violence. because it is in every police district. In Chicago, there are 525 calls a day about domestic violence. So it's a huge problem. Now, some victims don't know they're victims. They might make excuses for their husband, say, well, you know, I live with a difficult guy and I have to be careful what I say, not to set him off. Or maybe because she's never been hit, she thinks she's not a victim. But domestic violence is much broader than physical abuse. Its definition is any pattern of behavior which seeks power and control over another person. And that power and control can be exercised physically, but also verbally or emotionally, or economically or sexually. I think we all know physical abuse, no? Punching someone, slapping them, kicking them, pushing them, throwing things at them, many ways. Verbal or emotional abuse is the most common form, but it's the most difficult to detect. There are no broken bones, no bruises. But many victims say it actually hurts more because it attacks the human spirit. All the insults, the constant criticism, the belittling, or the foul words. Or maybe it's excessive jealousy or isolation from family and friends. Economic abuse happens more than we might think, especially for women who don't work outside the home, because they're totally dependent upon their husbands, and if the men want to control them with money, they can do it. Or maybe the men have assets and they've never shared them with their wives. Or they've created debt with credit cards and the wives don't even know it and they're co-responsible for it. And sexual abuse is perhaps more frequent in these times than in previous years, largely because of the easy access to pornography on the internet. So some men will watch it and then want their wives to watch it. And most women find it disgusting. Or maybe it's forced intimacy or intimacy declined, resistant. Or maybe it's infidelity. Some people don't think anything of it. I'll tell you a story about a man who called me very insistently on a Friday afternoon. He wanted me to talk to him and his wife. I didn't have time, but we met in the chapel after Mass on Sunday. He said, "Father, I want you to talk to my wife here. She's always been unfaithful to me, looking at other men. But this was the last straw this week. I came home after work, and I found the back door to our apartment open. And I know there was a man in our house, Father. I went out into the yard, and I saw my neighbor by the alley. I said, 'Hey, you see a guy back there?' He said he thought he had. 'I know there was a man in my house, Father. Talk to her.' So I asked him to step out, and I said to her, 'Has he always been this jealous with you?' 'Oh, Father, we've been married 10 years. We have 3 children. And his jealousy has just gotten worse.' I said, 'Well, when you were dating him, was he jealous then?' 'Oh, yes.' I said, 'Well, why did you marry him?' 'Well,' she said, 'I thought once we got together day and night, the jealousy would disappear. But it hasn't.' I said, 'That's because it's not jealousy. This is his way of making you feel very insecure and uncertain. He gets into your mind so that everything you do, you're wondering, what will he say? How will he react?' Let me ask her, I said, 'Does he hit you?' 'Well, not recently.' I said, 'Well, when was the last time?' 'About 3 months ago.' 'Well, do you have a job? Do you have some income?' 'Oh, I had a great job, but he made me quit. He accused me of fraternizing with the men at the plant, so I had to leave.' 'So do you have money then to maintain the household?' 'Father, I have to plead for every penny just to have money to buy food for the table or clothing for the children.' 'Well, does he use bad words on you?' I said. 'Oh, Father, they're so horrible. I can't even tell you what they are.' 'Well,' I said, 'how does he treat you sexually?' 'Well,' she said, 'when he wants to be affectionate, he can be.' So with her permission, she stepped out, and he came back in, and I confronted him about this, and he surprised me because he admitted quite a bit, not everything, but enough so that I could invite him into our parish program for men who abuse their wives, so he would confront his behavior and make changes. And I invited her into our parish program for women who are abused, so she would begin to understand the dynamics of domestic violence and have the strength to resist it. This is just one case, and every case is different, but it gives us an idea. Now sometimes, the good news about this is that domestic violence is learned behavior. It's not something we inherit in our genes. It's not a mental illness. We learn it from someplace. Maybe our parents, or the media, or trial and error. And that means it can be unlearned. New ways of relating to one's partner or spouse can be learned. But men and women who abuse their partners, they don't change easily. They think that what they're doing is pretty good. In fact, they may even think she needs a smack every once in a while just so she knows who's boss. Or sometimes they might make excuses. They might say, oh, well, I was just drinking a little too much. Or, you know, I'm under a lot of stress. I don't have a job. But those reasons don't explain it. They can aggravate it. But the cause is a decision to exercise power and control over another person. There are plenty of alcoholics who don't abuse their wives. And there are plenty of men who don't drink, and they do abuse their wives. So alcohol and abuse are separate problems. Now, sometimes there's a huge explosion. She may end up in the emergency room. Or maybe it's a yelling match after which he knows he's gone too far, and she may leave, and he doesn't want that. So he's going to come and say, I'm sorry. I don't know what got into me. Please forgive me. I'll never do it again. So she has to decide. Should she forgive him? She's a Christian. She believes in forgiveness. She wants to keep the family together. So she decides to forgive him. And she's surprised. He seems to have changed. You know, he's bringing her flowers. He's helping out in the house. It's like a honeymoon. But gradually, tensions build. And things revert to the way they were. And then there's another explosion, followed by more remorse and more requests for forgiveness. And she has to decide, should I forgive him again? I've known women who've lived in this cycle of domestic violence for more than 25 years. And each time their husbands say, I'm sorry, I'll never do it again, they think, well, maybe this time he'll follow through. But many don't. Many don't change. Some do. But many don't. It's not easy. Well, we might say, why doesn't she get up and leave? She doesn't have to stay. But that's not easy either. There are many reasons why victims stay. One obvious reason is financial, right? I mean, she might have a job, but she knows her standard of living is going to go down if they separate. And that's going to affect her standard of living and her children's. And so she may not want it. She may decide to suffer through it. Or maybe she stays because she's too embarrassed. She's never told anybody. And if she leaves, they're going to find out. Her friends are going to say, what's the matter with you? You stand with that guy. She doesn't want to hear that. Maybe her father told her, you stay with that guy or you marry that guy. Don't come back with your problems to us. So she doesn't think she can go to her family. So she stays. And she's feeling guilty. After all, she chose him, and she can't fix it. Some women stay because they've internalized the abuse. Imagine hearing every day, you're stupid. Everything you touch is a disaster. Look at the mess. You couldn't hold a job. And look at you. You're fat. You're ugly. Nobody's going to want you. You have to stay with me. And she believes it. Her self-esteem is on the floor. She's walking around half-depressed. She doesn't have the strength to separate herself. Some women stay because they're afraid. He may have told her, you leave me, you'll pay for it, you'll see. And she knows he's a violent man. He may have a gun in the house. He may have said, you leave me and I'll kill you, or I'll kill the children, or I'll kill myself. And she doesn't want any of that. So she stays out of fear. She sees that it happens on the television, the news. Some women stay because of the children. They see that their fathers love the children. And in fact, the men might be good fathers, but not very good husbands. In fact, they may know if they keep the children close to them, their wives will never leave. The children will say, "Mommy, Mommy, we don't want to leave Daddy." And the mothers won't have a heart to take their children away from their fathers. But I will say to women like this, what is one of the worst things a mother can do for her children? It's to have her sons growing up in an environment where they're learning to abuse women, and the daughters are growing up learning how to be submissive to abuse. And when they look for a partner to get married, they could end up in a relationship just like yours. Do you want that? Oh, they all say, "No way. I don't want my children to suffer like I am." Well, then you have to be strong. You have to free yourself and free them. You have to know that children who are raised in families where there's abuse between their parents are at much greater risk. A greater risk of dropping out of school, of abusing drugs and alcohol, of ending up in jail, of even attempting suicide. It's risky. Finally, many victims stay because they made a promise right here at the altar before God that they would stay in that relationship until death. And they don't want to commit a sin. They don't want to offend God. So they think they have to stay. But I always say, can you imagine Jesus walking down the street one day and he comes across a woman with a black eye, her arm is in a sling, and he says, "What happened to you?" And she says, "Well, my husband beat me." What do you think Jesus would say to her? Would he say, "You got to go back to him and work it out"? Or would he say, "Come with me and I will make you safe"? I think that's what he would say, right? That's what we have to say as the Church of Jesus Christ. Come to us and we will help you be safe. Unfortunately, our church has been a little complicit in this because we haven't talked very much about it. I'm referring to us priests. We've preached a lot about marriage, and it's a beautiful sacrament. Two people joined in love to experience God's love and then radiate that love to the world through our children. It's beautiful. But what happens when it doesn't work? We don't say much. How many of you have ever heard a sermon about domestic violence? Raise your hand. One, two. I've been a priest for over 50 years, and for more than half of those years, I didn't preach about it. And I'd seen some serious cases. But it wasn't until I hired a pastoral counselor on our parish staff, and one day she said to me, "You know, Father, almost all my clients are women, and most of them are victims of domestic violence." I had no idea, and I knew many of those women, but I didn't see the problem. She opened my eyes, and that's what we have to do. So the good news is that our bishops in the United States have written a beautiful pastoral letter. It's called When I Call for Help. You can Google that. It comes right up. When I Call for Help. In the first paragraph, they say, "We have to state as strongly and clearly as we can that violence against women inside or outside the home is never justified, and it is a sin and often a crime." And then they conclude the letter by saying, "We emphasize that no one is expected to stay in an abusive marriage." Those are words of liberation for many women and some men. No one is expected to stay in an abusive marriage. That's the position of the Catholic Church, and many people don't know it. We have to get the word out, especially to people who are suffering abuse in their own homes. We don't want them to experience that. We want to help them to experience love and understanding. I'm the director of domestic violence outreach for the Archdiocese of Chicago, and I've been to over 100 parishes in the Archdiocese preaching about this and forming a ministry. So Father Kevin has asked me to come here to the Shield Center. So I'll be back tomorrow night at 7 o'clock in the lower level to meet with anybody who would like to talk more about this or learn more or get help. You know, everybody's invited, victims, non-victims, men, women, everybody. And we'll talk about how to do this. If you can't come, there is a sheet in the commons area outside that you can sign up for, and we'll contact you for the second meeting. And if you'd like to make a donation, there are some envelopes out there for that purpose, and I thank you. But wouldn't it be wonderful if everybody in Evanston and everybody at the university knew you have a problem in your relationship, whether you're dating or whether you're married, you know, or whether you have a partner. If you have a problem, come to the Shield Center, because there they understand. There they will help you. There the compassion of Jesus is accessible for you. That's what we want. And we can do that. What we want is people who have given up hope in their own homes to come and find hope with us. People who are living in darkness to find light here with us. That's what we want. We want to be the hands and the heart of our compassionate Lord, helping everyone who's experiencing abuse in their homes to come to us to find peace, security, and love. So let us respond as Jesus would. Thank you.